interrupt this broadcast to bring you this breaking news just in. We're getting unconfirmed and frankly almost unbelievable reports that one of the failing writers has actually got something finished. We'll have more on this breaking story as we get it. And now, back to your usual scheduled program.
So the question this week, boys, isn't what have you been writing?
Good.
We promised ourselves that we would talk about what we are going to write by setting some writing goals.
Yes.
It's like a New Year's resolution, but the smart thing is, normally by March, people have stopped their New Year's resolutions and fallen by the wayside.
Yeah.
We're smarter than that, so we're not doing ours until March.
I've got a question. I can't remember. Have we done this before? As in, have we named our goals on this podcast?
I think we did, but it was a very long time ago.
And we still haven't fulfilled
it. We still haven't done it.
But I think this might be different this time, because I think we might try and carry them through.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope so.
Well, I think a lot of it is about making them a bit... Now we've done the podcast a bit, and we've hopefully learnt more about the industry and what we actually want to do and all the different things we can do.
And what we like writing as
well. Yeah.
Which is quite important.
Maybe we've got a bit more information at our fingertips to make some decent, well-thought-out goals.
Yes.
Which I'm sure we will massively disprove in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But in theory, that's where we should be at, isn't
it? I like this idea. This feels very un-Tom to me. But do you do goals normally, Tom?
No, it's just that's a hindrance, isn't it? Because with actual written goals, then...
Well, they just make you feel bad, don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Without that, you can just kind of blur the edges and go, yeah, it's probably all right. Yeah, probably did okay.
So I think this could be very good for us, couldn't it?
Times are changing, John. Times are changing.
Yeah, let's be definitive and definite.
It'll certainly give us a hilarious episode about sort of December time, won't it, to look back on them and see just how much we have achieved.
We'll play this little bit out and then we'll talk about where we've got to. Yeah, that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
That is good.
Perhaps people could take bets on whether we will actually achieve these goals.
Not sure they're going to get any favourable odds that would make that
No, exactly.
Might not be, yeah. Anyway, Dave, why don't you go first?
Oh, bloody hell. All right, I'll try. Okay, so I do have definitive goals, but they are probably the same definitive goals that I had previously. But I am absolutely 100% committed in a fully targeted and responsible way to finally finishing the Spooky War Book Remembrance Day.
Yes.
I'm gonna finish
Come
that,
on.
and I am going to try and do something with it. No, that's too
that
vague.
Is too vague. I am going to try and
I'm gonna try and do something with it. Yeah, tighten that up for us, Dave. Come on,
I am gonna send it to someone. Is that less vague?
We're getting closer, Dave.
I'm going to find out who to send it to and then send it to them. I'm going to send it to somebody who I don't currently know, who can then stand in judgment upon
Are you willing to put a date on that, to firm that up anymore, or even a
2020.
No, it needs to be this year. These are things we're going to do this year.
I was going to say four. I was going to say 2024.
Okay.
Right.
So yeah. December 31st.
This year. No. No. November the 11th.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes.
Remembrance Day, I will have finished Remembrance Day. There we go.
All right, that's good.
All imagine us stood round a copy of Dave's manuscript just with the last post playing. Well, he didn't make it, chaps.
No, I believe in you, Dave. You can do that. How...
Yeah, I can do that.
Where will you get that time from? This is a tricky thing, isn't it?
I knew you'd start doing this, John.
Well, it's important.
It's painful enough doing goals without someone delving into them.
You've got to have an idea about the realities of how it's going to work. Have you thought about that yet, Dave? You don't have to have it set in stone.
No. Well, do you know what? Do you know what, John? The thing is, right? Time is not an issue. Time isn't really an issue. I mean, yes, I am very busy. But time isn't really the issue, because everyone's got the same amount of time every day. It's motivation.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the issue. It's actually getting off my ass and using those 5 or 10 or 30 or, 50 minutes or whatever it is that I've actually got to do it.
I think this is the thing. If you think, right, how many man hours will it take you to achieve that goal?
Of actual physical writing, probably, not really very many.
Yeah.
Not really very many.
No, and if you spread that across the rest of the year, like you say, time isn't really an issue, is it?
If I actually just sat down and wrote for an hour a day, which is doable, it wouldn't really take me that long. But if I sit down for 55 minutes a day going, I really ought to get on with something soon, then I won't get it done.
Mm.
So, yes, it's motivation and just bloody get on with it.
That is good. I feel like that was quite a powerful confession there, Dave.
Yes. Look, if you don't do it, it won't get done.
Fantastic. Well, that's good.
Any more, Dave? Any more?
More? No. One's enough. Let's stick with one. Because I don't want to give myself unrealistic targets.
Quite right.
And then, not do anything.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
It's easy to get paralysed by thinking, I could do this or I could do that, or I could do the other. No, just pick one thing and bloody do it.
I think that's a lot where this idea of putting these goals in place came from in my head, to be honest.
It also massively helps that you do have a finished book. As
there's a draft. Is a draft.
Sat there waiting for someone to do something with it. You know, it's got so much potential.
And unfortunately, that someone has to be me. That's the downside.
What about you, Tom?
Right. Well, I have decided. So I think I get stuck in little ruts of trying to do big jobs and not really doing them. So as hopefully a help to keep me moving along, like a shark in the water, breathing. My first one is I'm going to enter 5 flash fiction competitions this year.
Oh, that's good.
It's a good one, that, as well. It's clever, isn't
it? It is.
I didn't say I'm going to write 5 different flash fiction stories, did I?
No.
I might do.
True.
But no, I thought that would be good. That's something that can be ticked off on a list as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's another good. Done that one, didn't
they? Yeah, if you were to write a sort of funny, romantic, scary murder mystery, you could just enter that into loads of different things, couldn't you? And it would fit.
As long as it was based in sort of a historical context. Yeah. Yes, I think you could, Dave. Mm-hmm. I think that would tick a lot of boxes. Yeah. So that's bloody happening.
That's that.
I tell you.
Yes.
I'll bloody tell you.
Doable.
Isn't it? That is.
It gets the doable stamp.
It does. I don't know if I want to read this one out now.
You've run out of steam already.
No, I just don't want to say it out loud because...
Go on.
Come on.
I don't think I'm going to do it. But
squeeze
I've written it
out.
Down because I've...
Come on.
So I need to edit my kids' book thing.
Yeah.
And that should be it, really. But that's not enough for the entire year. Like Dave, I think I need to send it to some random people.
Yes.
I think that's a good idea.
Yep.
Test the water. Yeah. Get rejected. All that business. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Earn some stripes.
Are you thinking querying, or are you thinking send it to sort of... middle grade editor people.
I think agents querying. I think really.
Just go straight for it.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I was thinking about the whole thing and editing and stuff, and I know it's meant to be as sharp as it goes, but I think that'll just get me bogged down again. I can do this and move on to something else. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I think that's my problem. I get bogged down in the. I actually wrote a little note on the end of my goals of overall. To stop letting perfect be the enemy of just actually getting something done.
Yeah.
I
think that's a good shout.
So just getting stuff out there.
Because you are going to have rejections. That's the thing, isn't it? It's like coming to terms with
there isn't the perfect.
No,
exactly.
There isn't.
It's waiting for somebody to see the potential.
Yeah,
it?
And you might send out something that's slightly worse, but goes to the right person at the right time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Some traction.
For example, your little quote there, don't let perfect get in the way of getting something done. As a quote, isn't perfect, is it? I think you could work on that a little bit as a sort of motivational poster.
That should be the first goal, Tom.
Yeah. No, that'll bog me down again. We'll be going around in circles.
Yeah, it was a lovely little quote. It's a very quotable quote.
Yeah. So yeah.
Good.
Well, I think that's cracking. That's Tom.
Are we happy with? Is that enough?
Yeah.
Do I not need to read the third one out? Cool, John. What have you got?
No. What's the other one?
What?
What's the other one?
What's what?
You got another one there. I was just looking over your shoulder. You got another one?
I don't know.
What is it?
I just don't want to say it.
Come on, Tom. Sherry time.
But this is the bit where we go back to the first season and then you realise how much time's passed and then you feel a bit sad about how rubbish you are.
That is true. But let's Let's read it out anyway.
Let's hear it.
I think I should self-publish my Chad Nardworthy City Sales book.
Yes.
Just get it out there.
Yes.
I was hoping you'd have that
just
one.
Just do it. Like, just, again, same thing. Just think, God, look, it doesn't matter. It's done. Just so it's just done. And I've said that before and I never did it.
It's a book out there.
Yeah, exactly.
See, there's loads of rubbish books out there. One more, what difference would it make?
Why not? Yeah. Then I can be like all these annoying people. I can be like all these annoying people on Twitter then, can't I? Well, public and talk about being published.
Yeah, published also.
Got one self-published book on Amazon? Why not send a tweet out asking if anyone wants to ask any questions about the publishing industry before telling them not to use adverbs or adjectives or capital letters or full stops or commas or words or tenses. Don't use tenses. Amateur writing. So I think I could get into that.
You'd love that, wouldn't
you? There's been an awful lot of that on the socials in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Of completely unsolicited writing advice.
Yeah.
Very extreme, absolutely don't do this under any circumstances advice for things that you think, it's kind of just writing, isn't it?
I'm sure so people do it just to get a rise out of people. I can't believe
I'm
people
sure it
really
is a short engagement, as they call it.
I can't believe
it.
People are that certain about stuff.
No, they're not. And people do put things on for engagement. You might say, oh, fellow writers, what kind of shoes does your main character wear? You think, no, that's not. No one cares. We're just doing this for likes and upvotes or whatever. Yeah, no, silly. That is the end of my list.
That's a good list.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a good list. And they all get the doable stamp, so that's good.
I think so. Well, I think they're all, and it's back to what we're saying about, it's all in our control, isn't it?
It's
not saying, I'm going to get picked up by an agent. I'm not going to say I'm going to win a flash fiction competition. Yeah. It's just things we can achieve.
Yeah.
Only you can make a mess of it.
Yeah.
Very good. Well done. Well, I've also got three goals for this year. Do you have deadlines for them, Tom? Have you given yourself hard deadlines?
Yeah, this year, John. Jesus
just
Christ,
this year.
What's your problem?
Okay. Well, mine's
get
a bit
off
similar.
My back.
Mine's similar,
just read
but
them
I gave. Okay, I gave mine just arbitrary months. I don't really know why. I just thought that's probably doable.
I think you obviously need that because you keep trying to force that on other people as well. But it's obviously it's obviously something in your head that otherwise you know it'll just kind of run away.
Well, if I make them all 31st of December...
You're going to have a very busy New Year's Eve,
Exactly. So, September.
Yeah.
Let's start in September.
Yeah.
Katie and I...
Start in September.
Just wants a bit of time off, Dave, to work up to it.
I'm just starting the list in September.
6 months just to kind of get in the vibe, and then it's time for some work.
Exactly.
Well, by September, I will have finalised the goals, the deadlines for these goals.
September's quite early if I'm going to finish everything in December, so...
Yeah.
Yes, Katie and I are going to finish our play, God damn it.
Yes.
And start rehearsal for the Happy Marriage Show.
Wow.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to finish... Some point in September, we're going to finish our play.
When's your birthday,
and that's going
John?
To be the, when's my birthday? April.
Didn't... What? I think we have done goals before.
We don't need to. We don't need to look back. This isn't about looking back, Dave.
That's true. Yeah,
this is about moving forward to the future.
That seemed like a long time away when you said it the first time, didn't it?
That's the upsetting thing. Yeah. Let's not dwell on when I said that.
No, this is about positivity and moving forward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing.
Great.
Katie and I have been kind of. I was going to say knuckling down. We haven't been knuckling down. We've been chipping away is what we've been doing. But we need to get on that a bit.
I think on that one as well, because you've done a decent amount of it. I mean, you've got a chunk there.
We have got quite
September
a big chunk.
September is a decent distance away.
Yeah, exactly.
And when it inevitably doesn't get done, you can blame Katie quite a lot. You can put quite a lot of blame onto Katie's plate.
We've created a deadline now. That's a hard deadline. That's going to happen.
Yeah, well, she better get herself sorted, not hold you back, John. That's all I'm saying.
Blame Katie.
Yeah.
The next one, by December, the end of December, I want to have written another two short love stories.
Oh, for the love story anthology pamphlet.
For the love story.
When you say I want to have written, do you mean I am going to write?
I will have written. Good, Sorry.
So how many of your crazy love stories will that give you?
I don't know, but I have finished another one.
Will you have enough to do something with them?
No, not yet. But I reckon if there are two more, that gives me a good springboard for to get something out maybe the following year. I don't know.
That's good if you're already planning your 2025 goals. That's great.
Well,
forward thinking. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good.
But my big news is that I finally finished the first draft of my book.
Okay, that doesn't count for this year's goals. Even though it's this year,
I know. So, but that again, that's quite exciting. That's a springboard.
Yeah.
Just having finished that.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm waiting for applause. There's nothing.
No,
so
it's because we're waiting to see what your goal, your next step with. What's the goal?
You haven't actually said the goal yet, John.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of work to do, obviously, on that. But come July, I'm going to send my manuscript to Joanna Frank, our ex-agent, literary editor, and pod pal, because I've decided I'm going to hire her services.
That's a great idea, John.
So that's going to happen July. So I've got until then to whip it into some kind of shape, and then hopefully she can help me, because it's going to need so much work. It's going to need a lot of structural edits and stuff. But I figure by summer, I will have kicked it into some kind of shape that I'm, you know, reasonably happy to show it to somebody.
Yeah, brilliant.
Good.
Do you know what I think you should do? You should contact her now and pay her now for the work that's going to happen
in
July.
That's quite good, yeah. With like a best before
date. Yeah, exactly. If you don't send it to her by the end of July, she just gets to keep the money and she doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he says, not quite. not quite committed. Just an arbitrary deadline. Let's remember, these were arbitrary deadlines.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got all year.
It's not arbitrary. It's a hard deadline. But yeah, it is. It's in quite a rough state at the moment. I'm not going to lie. It gets rougher towards the end. It's like the sprint for the finish line.
Yeah.
But it's a nice sense of achievement.
Yeah,
well
brilliant.
Done, John.
Thanks.
And do you know what's lovely about all these things?
What?
For all we mock ourselves for not getting stuff finished and what have you, all these things are actually about taking stuff a stage further than we normally would or have done.
Yeah.
That's true.
Whereas normally we go, oh, well, I finished that. Ignore that then.
Yeah.
Right, what's the next little thing to do?
It's true.
This is like taking it on proper stages.
Yeah. Do you know what's particularly gratifying as well?
Mm.
Is that the original intended outcome of this podcast, which was basically to encourage and cajole each other to write more and finish stuff, actually seems to have worked.
Yeah.
After only 4 years.
We could bottle that and sell it, lads, I tell you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's true, because I was so keen to not answer, you know, to not give the deadline or the goal. I was so keen to finish the draft because of us doing this podcast today that I actually properly cracked on. I spent loads of time writing in order to get it finished before we recorded, just so that I could tell you that.
Brilliant.
That's quite cool, isn't it? That's the power of the podcast.
That's it,
The power of our little writing community, which is a key theme of this week's pod. Because we are, you know, writers, we spend a lot of time on our own.
Mm.
And if we're honest, we can get a little bit, you know, hermity,
a bit stir crazy. Yeah.
So this episode is kind of about the advantages of interacting with other writers, isn't it? It's about getting involved.
Yeah, you're right, John. Writing is a community. And there's a community that we're aware of. And some people amongst us have done something with them. But I'm afraid I wasn't involved in that particular escapade. So I can't really comment on it.
But myself and John did speak to Sarah from Writers HQ. I'm sure a lot of you will be aware of Writers HQ. They are an irreverent...
Not irrelevant,
that don't take themselves seriously, but do take writing seriously and getting stuff done. And in many ways, there's some lovely parallels with the podcast, isn't there, really?
I think so, yes.
Similar vibes, similar attitudes.
Yes.
They maybe get more stuff done, but, you know, that's whatever. They don't do little songs and stuff, do they? So it's, you know... balances itself out eventually.
Yeah,
we thought we'd have a chat with Sarah to see what the crack was, really. So here's me and John talking to Sarah from Writers HQ.
How nice of you to join us. Thank you, Sarah.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. It's very nice to be here.
When I think of all the sort of various writing communities online and the companies offering their help and expertise, I always think that Writers HQ looks like our sort of people. The kind of people you'd quite like to hang out with.
Aww.
Who don't take themselves too seriously, but, you know, would like to take writing seriously. But it seems like you've built this really lovely, warm and supportive thing. That must feel very nice.
It does. Yeah, we have built a very nice, warm and supportive thing. And sometimes when I look at it, I go, oh, my God, what? How did that happen? And yeah, it can be quite overwhelming sometimes, especially there are days when I log into social media and I'm like, you know, oh, what's going on today? And all of a sudden there's like all these long lists and short lists for short stories and flash competitions. And they're like 50, 60, 70% full of Writers HQers. And at that point I'm like, okay.
What have I done?
Wow, all right then.
How did it all start off, Sarah? Where was the germ of inspiration?
So in 2011, so I did my MA in creative writing in East Anglia. And during my MA, I got pregnant with my eldest kid. Mm. And all my tutors were like, you have to finish this novel draft before you have a kid. You have to. And I was like, what do you know? I'm going to finish it on maternity leave. And they went, you're not. And I was like, yeah. Obviously, I then had a baby and went, oh, fuck, they were right. And when she was about 11 months old, I was like, this is fucking insane. And I booked a room in Brighton so I could go and spend the day writing. Mm. And I put a thing on Twitter saying, hey, I've got this room. Anyone want to come along and split the cost? I'll feed you. And I think like 20 people turned up.
Wow.
And I was like, huh.
There's a need for this.
Yeah, I've hit on something here.
I've accidentally flash mobbed myself.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it was an amazing day. And then I just sort of kept doing them.
Well, it was kind of a fine line between you starting sort of a writing thing and just a full-on cult, I would guess, at that point.
Yeah. The kind of running joke is that we're a secret cult hell-bent on dismantling the patriarchal capitalist hegemony via stories, which is a thing that can happen. Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, and then it just sort of grew from there, really, and now it's like this behemoth.
Mm. Did Joe Gatford go to that first one?
Joe Gatford was at the first one, absolutely. Wow. Yeah, so Joe was there, and we immediately hit it off. That just sort of evolved into I would pick her up on the way, and then she would sort of do the washing up at the end. And then when I had my second kid, she sort of covered running the retreats.
Right.
Yeah, and then we sort of became Writers HQ in 20. So we were called Brighton Writers Retreat. Then we became Writers HQ, I believe, in 2016.
This is a difficult question for you, but where is that novel now?
Oh, God, I should have sent you a list of things I'm simply not prepared to talk about. Yeah, no, that particular novel is in dusters. It went through many iterations. And then what happened? I think I got an Arts Council grant to work with Peter Hobbs, who's a slightly obscure but incredibly talented novelist. So I did an iteration of it with him. Oh, and I just got to the point with it where I was like, oh, I'm just done. I think I'd nailed all the like story bits in terms of like what was happening and who the people were and just, you know. And I just literally woke up one morning and went, oh, I'm done. So yeah, it's in a digital drawer.
So are you a bit like us, Sarah? You spend most of your time working on Writers HQ and then leave yourself very little time to actually write? Or are you one of those superhuman people who can just fit in everything? Are you writing more stuff as you go along?
I am not a superhuman person who can do that. Writers HQ is a decade-long procrastination project for me.
You see, they are our people.
It's good to meet you.
Yeah. I know, right? How have we been like adjacent all this time and never had the conversation?
I read a lovely quote of yours, Sarah, and I think it bears repeating here. You wrote, "All writing starts off terrible, and the best writers are the ones who keep going, sometimes for decades, even when the writing isn't quite right yet." But I think that's great. That is great. I think you always expect your writing to be, you always want your writing to be perfect first time, you know, your first draft and every word that you put down. It can't ever be like that, can it, really? And the more writers that we talk to, you realise that a lot of the time their first draft is really, really bad. And it's lovely when writers...
Yeah, admit where that. Was that? Where did you read that? Where did I say that?
Some interview with some blogger, I can't remember.
Cool. I love it when I say stuff and it turns out to not be bollocks. It's really
it's
good.
Really clever.
Yeah, I think so much of what happens at Writers HQ is explaining to people how shit their writing is going to be and letting it be shit. Like I've just done a run of Plot Stormers with a bunch of brilliant, brilliant people. Mm. And every webinar, like every week, every check-in we had for the whole time was still like, guys, lower your bar. Lower it. I don't think people realise how terrible those first drafts are.
Mm.
But that's fine.
The one I've written, I've nearly finished the first draft of a novel, and it is, I'm reading back bits of it, and it is really quite bad.
But, oh, but even, you see, even when you say a first draft, I'm on a one-woman mission against this idea of a first draft. Oh. I remember having a conversation with someone who told me that first draft, because I said, oh, I finished first draft, and to me that was like 20,000 words of me going, ugh, and like just dumping everything that was in my brain. And she's like, no, that's not a first draft. First draft is when you have like from beginning to end everything that happens in the story broadly in order. And I was like, well, that's not really a first draft though, is it? That's actually more like a 50th draft. And I think people get really, I think people get quite confused about what it is we're actually doing. And interestingly, the more I speak to people who call themselves plotters, because I would call myself a plotter, people who call themselves pantsers, I think we're all doing the same thing. Yeah. I think secretly we're all doing the same thing. It's just that some of us like spreadsheets and some of us
do not. And we have slightly different signposts and names for the stages we're at.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. Because I interviewed Lisa Franson, who's an amazing local author, the other day. And she said, oh, I'm a pantser. And then went on to tell me about how she kind of lists out all her scenes once she's written them and moves them around. And I'm like, that's planning!
Well, that's really interesting.
That would be a shock for the writing community, wouldn't it, if pantsers were actually just exceptionally deep planners.
Right? Oh, can we make this happen?
Mm. Actually, by just going through and writing a first draft by the seat of your pants, that's actually like a uber first stage of planning. That's like a ridiculous level of planning.
Yeah, well, it is.
A massive, long outline.
If you talk to a planner, that's all they're doing in that first bit of planning is writing a long outline.
But usually with less detail. They're not doing as good a job as planning as a pants. This is very confusing.
Right? So, you know, like the horseshoe theory of politics, where like eventually you just sort of get around in a circle. If you go so far one way, you sort of pop out the other side. Maybe this is what's going on.
Yeah,
I like that. That's good. Can you give us a bunch of highlights of Writers HQ? Stuff you do that's very much, you know, worth getting involved with. Sell it, Sarah.
Oh, God.
We want to be walking away. If we're not walking away from this chat and signing straight up for a Writers HQ Gold Star membership, then you have not done
your job.
Are you
telling me
that
you're not already members? Because frankly,
we're not, but I feel like we're at the tipping point.
You're at the tipping point. Okay, so what does Writers HQ do? We run retreats and courses. So we have lots of real life events and we have lots of online events. The retreats are one day events where we basically lock you in a room. We turn off the Wi-Fi.
Oh, you do? You take everyone's phone off.
Well, we say we turn off the Wi-Fi. We're more generous than that. It's a threat more than a promise.
It's good.
And then we just like feed you caffeine and pastries and gold stars. And they are, these are the kind of retreats that were sort of born from that original day in Brighton. And the idea is most people don't have a week and £5,000 to go to Tuscany and whop around being like, oh, I'm a writer. And it's just this like really short, intense day. They're super, super productive. We've just done one in Birmingham. People like, they'll get like 3,000-5,000 words a day done and then sleep for a week. So they're great. They're really good fun, especially in Brighton, which has now been going for about 12 years. It's just a really lovely community. We always end up going for a drink afterwards. So that's very nice. Mm-hmm. So that's that bit of it. Then online, we've got about 100 courses, and that covers everything from there's like 5-day courses on productivity all the way to like a 6-month course on writing your first draft, which may or may not be a first draft. Who knows what we're calling it now? And then what? And then loads of webinars constantly. Right. We do an online retreat. We have a monthly event called Flash Face Off. Have you seen that?
We chatted with Kathy Hoyle, told us about that.
Yeah.
And we haven't quite plucked up the courage to do it yet, have we, Tom? But I think I think we need to.
Oh,
do that.
You have.
We
to
have
do
talked
we
about
probably,
definitely
we probably
doing
should
that.
Do
the Flash
that,
Face Off is incredible. We started it over lockdown, and it's just become really not just popular, but really important. So every week we will put prompts out on the website, and they're two opposing themes, bunch of quotes, bunch of images. You go and write a 500-word story, stick it on the forum. Everyone will critique your story. You go and critique other people's stories. And then once a month we have like a big open mic night. And it's great because everybody's turning out these little stories. Those long lists and short lists I mentioned at the beginning, so many of those people are like, oh, this is a story that started at Flash Face Off. And it's just fun and it's just like low stakes. And it's a really good way if you're stuck in the procrastination trap, like we obviously all are.
Yep.
It's just a really good thing to sort of get you going. And it's like, well, I've written a story. It's a short one, but it's just as valid as any of the others. Mm. And I've done it.
Brilliant. That sounds great.
The Short Story Writing Festival, we'll be into this when this goes out. We'll be sort of halfway through probably. But if people have missed half of it, would you be able to view, like, for instance, like the masterclass that Kathy's doing? Would you be able to view that after the event is finished? Or is that kind of tough shit? You missed it. Unlucky.
No, no. It's all recorded. It's all going to be... There's going to be replays on the site, and it's kind of designed so that you can start at the beginning and start a new short story and write it along with everybody else the whole way through the month. Or you can dip in and out, depending on where you are. You can do it however works for you. So if we're halfway through and you listen to this and you're like, oh, yeah, I want to get involved, you can come watch the replays. There'll still be loads of events.
So what do people need to do to sign up for Writers HQ and for that?
They need to go to the website, which is writershq.co.uk. And there is a very big button on the right-hand side that says join. And you click that and then do whatever else it tells you. And you have to hand over some actual cash money. It's £20 a month. And then if you go to events on the menu, there's a big thing that says Writer Short Story Festival. So click on that. You'll get all the events and you can just register for them.
So tell us about the future of Writers HQ. You're just going to keep going, more of the same, or have you got big, crazy plans to dominate the world? Or...
Yeah, more events. I'm planning a big event later in the year, which currently doesn't have a name, but is about sort of writing for kind of social change. So writing about climate change, writing about political things, but through fiction. So this is a bit of an obsession of mine. I've been working on a new novel around climate change. I kind of want to get into that. That's kind of a big upcoming thing that I'm seeing.
So you're writing a book about that.
Have I let slip that I'm actually doing some writing? Shit. I'm ruining my reputation.
How are you going to find the time to...
I have a draft and I keep trying to put like a day a week aside, but then getting sidetracked with running Writers HQ.
Yeah, we understand. It's fine. No pressure from us.
Yeah.
You keep moving that deadline. It's fine.
Absolutely. What are you writing?
That's all we've got time for, I'm afraid. Sarah. Oh, we've come up against the clock there. That's frustrating, isn't it? Anyway.
Oh, what a terrible show.
That is annoying. Shall I tell you what Tom's doing?
Tell him what you were doing. That was so pathetic. We are so pathetic.
Tom is writing a middle grade children's book.
Amazing.
Which he's, you have read some of it out.
I did.
You did a little bit of it, didn't you, for the podcast? Yeah. And it was really good.
Oh, thank you.
How far through it are you?
I finished the draft, struggling to get back into it to edit, but that's what I need to be doing.
Yeah. Do you know someone who's got a really, really good course on editing a novel?
Who would that be, Sarah?
Well, it's Writers HQ at writershq.co.uk.
Cool. I might check them out. I feel like we've slipped into a 1980s radio advert there.
Well, I must go there now.
What was that number again?
John, where have you gone?
So that was Sarah from Writers HQ. Well worth a look at their stuff. Obviously, from what she said there, there's so many different things that they do with the groups and the retreats and the online stuff and all kinds of stuff.
And there's lots of stuff in their back catalogue to get involved in as well.
And some good success stories coming out of that. We did actually ask her about that, which led on to something interesting. So here's that question coming up.
So you were talking before about Writers HQ members have gone on to do great and good things.
Yes.
Are you able to kind of name any that you can think of off the top of your head?
No, I can't, because now my brain has gone blank.
It's really hard to do that.
And invariably you'll miss someone
else. Exactly.
Actually,
politically that's a terrible thing to do, isn't it? You can't do that. Never mind. We'll just take your word for it.
Do you know what? I did get an email last week from Samuel Burr, who is a retreat. He wrote a lot of his novel at the Brighton retreats. So his debut is called The Fellowship of Puzzle Makers.
Yes.
Where he got one of those dream six-figure deals.
Whoa.
And that is out in May. And that was written at Brighton Writers Retreat.
So we thought, seeing she's mentioned Samuel Burr there, let's have a bloody chat with him.
And also, I wasn't in that last bit, so let's have something that Dave. I'm in, shall we? Hey? Yeah.
Well, I don't know if your ears were burning, Samuel, but we were just talking about you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were talking with Sarah from Writers HQ, and we asked her to name her least favourite... No, it wasn't. Asked her to name any sort of success stories that have come out of Writers HQ recently, and she went, oh, I don't know, you're putting me on the spot. Oh, Samuel Burr! Uh-huh. And then about that time, your email landed in our inbox.
God, how funny. That is really bizarre.
It was like a proper, like, serendipitous moment. So we thought, oh, God, we're going to have him on the show now.
The universe demands
it. So thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
And we should outline that you're... Where are you doing this Zoom from?
So I'm doing this from a telephone booth in the London Library, and, which closes in exactly 40 minutes.
So we've literally got... So it's like this is excitement, isn't it? It's like puts it against the
clock. It's like a proper interview, that, isn't it?
And will you be shepherded off by security, a friendly librarian?
There's a guy that comes around to lock up. God knows what happens if you don't get out in time, because it's huge. It's six floors. I don't know if you know the London Library, but it's kind of famously, it's got over 1 million books. It's sort of tucked away in St James's in Piccadilly, and it's an amazing place to come and write. But yeah, you can easily get lost here, and I do want to make sure I'm out before they start locking the doors.
So we will talk about your current exploding success that you're going through at the minute, it seems. But since we've talked about Writers HQ, that might be quite a nice place to start. Tell us how you got involved with it and how it helped you.
I think one of the things I've loved most about sort of making that transition from television to books is what a brilliant sort of friendly community there is out there.
Quickly, we should say, shouldn't we? Give us a bit of your background there about the TV stuff so everyone's on the same page, yeah.
So yeah, I used to be a TV development producer in sort of unscripted TV. So I used to work for independent production companies and would sort of devise and develop and pitch new TV programs.
Now, is that one of those jobs where you meet someone at a party and you say what you do and they go, oh my God, that's amazing. And they think that's the best job ever and everyone wants that job and it's wonderful. And you sit there going, oh my God, you have no idea how frustrating and hard and stupid it is.
It's totally that. And it's monkey tennis and pitching all that. It's everyone's got an idea they think should be on screen, and you have to sort of learn to be able to listen to that and sort of give them sort of feedback.
Only a handful of episodes back, I was trying to convince John that Maggie Philbin's Favourite Cafes was a hot property. Never really got traction for some. Never got traction for some reason.
That's early peak. That's Classic More Four. Cafes. That would do really well.
Yeah.
I used to do a lot of that.
Sorry, is that a definite no on the Maggie Philbin thing? Just for me.
Leave it with me.
Yeah. Sorry, carry on.
So yeah, I've sort of moved from that world into writing books. And one of the things I've loved is the sort of community that's out there. And I think it's what's kind of brilliant is that you can learn so much basically for free. You know, there's so many amazing resources out there from, you know, people that set up YouTube channels to people like, the guys that run Writers HQ, which is, if you don't know what it is, it's an online platform where there's a sort of forum of writers. You can sort of share work and get feedback in that way. But what I sort of used it for, and what I found really, really useful, was they had these sort of online writing hours. So they'd have a sort of fixed time where you'd all log on to Zoom, and there'd be a few hundred people on Zoom together, and you basically just were forced to write for 50 minutes. And it's bizarre because I didn't know who any of these people were on the little boxes on Zoom, but you just feel like a bit of a knob if you don't actually do the writing. You know, there's no point signing up for something like that and then just looking through Twitter. You might as well get some words down. So I think I definitely used it for that, and I found it so useful just to have that sort of virtual community of people doing the same thing as me that sort of understood the challenges. I used it as sort of as a sort of productivity tool, I guess. And then I've sort of attended one of their retreats as well.
Oh, okay. So what was that like?
That was great. It was just exactly the same as it was on Zoom, but just in person. So you basically got to see some of the people that you would see on Zoom.
So you really couldn't get away with having a slide.
Exactly, absolutely.
That might imply, Sam, that you perhaps are a little bit of a procrastinator occasionally. Is that true?
Oh, God. Yes. I am a sort of procrastinist, but I am also a perfectionist. And I think that's sort of, it goes together. I mean, I've sort of found various ways to sort of improve my productivity. I'm sure lots of people say this, but I haven't been tested or anything, but I am fairly certain I am ADHD to a quite an extreme level. And so I've sort of been researching and looking into different methods that I can use to sort of just make sure I'm getting the words down. I think one thing that I have realized is that I'm quite competitive with myself. So if I sort of set myself sort of 25 minute slots of writing time, which is what I try to do, I try to keep it quite short and succinct so that I don't end up losing focus. And then I just basically just will keep a list of how many words I do in each 25 minute slot. And I'm sort of competing with myself.
Right.
And I find that that's quite a helpful way of actually just making sure I get the words done. I'm sure you've all probably heard of the whole Pomodoro method, what I use. Yeah, I haven't done it in a while, but I've even bought a Pomodoro timer. That's the level of procrastination I've reached. I was Googling the method and I've even bought a timer that I haven't used.
For those of us that don't know what it is, i.e. me, what is it?
Something to do with tomatoes, isn't it?
Juggling tomatoes or something.
I don't understand the tomato link because, Pomodoro is a type of tomato, I think. But Pomodoro is essentially sort of breaking down a task into sort of more manageable chunks. So
right.
I think they advise 25-minute intervals with a five-minute sort of break in between each 25 minutes. You do that four times and then you have a much longer break.
Yeah.
It does kind of work. You know, if you've got a timer counting down in front of you that says, 25 minutes, 19 minutes, 15 minutes, again, you're sort of telling yourself you can wait 15 minutes before you check Twitter or check your phone. You know, it's not, you haven't got that long. You know, just hang on in there. And so, that's something I've used and I'm going to start using that again for the second book.
Do you find that your typing gets more erratic as you get towards the end? You can see the timer counting down.
Oh, totally.
Come on, get the words down. Absolutely.
Also, I've got this thing where I can't start a half-hour slot at a random time. It has to be on the hour.
Round number.
And sometimes it gets to the point where it's like, well, it's 12 minutes past now. I might as well wait to the half past.
It's just like, it's a snooze function of writing, really.
It is exactly that. Yeah.
But I'm sure you make incredibly good use of the time in between those minutes you've saved there, don't you?
Just go on Twitter. That's all I do. It's pathetic. Yeah. Absolutely.
Everyone's listening to this just nodding.
So when you started writing, as in novel writing, were you doing your day job at the same time? It wasn't like you just went, right, I'm going to give up my job and start writing. Presumably you were doing both side by side.
Yes, and...
Because that makes it harder, I think.
Yeah, I think I was... That was tough. I mean, I was getting up at... I used to do these weird... I used to get up 4:45 in the morning and do from 5 to 7.
5 a.m.?
That's impressive. 5 a.m.? Yeah, wow.
5 a.m. And actually, I did this thing once, which was, again, with another group of people. It wasn't a sort of organised... It wasn't a sort of led by any of the big companies, but it was a group of writers who would all meet on Zoom at 5 a.m. And they were a total stranger, and you'd be there in your dressing gown looking a bit sorry for yourself. But grim. But actually, there is something about those hours that feel a bit like snatched time. It feels like it's the sort of hours that otherwise you'd just be spending in bed. And I actually found that a lot of my favourite scenes sort of came about in those moments, because I just wasn't... I wasn't being as judgmental with my writing. I wasn't being as critical. I wasn't being so...
Yeah.
I wasn't overthinking everything. I was just getting the words down.
That's good. Yeah, you've kind of got an excuse to write badly because you're tired. It's early.
I suppose you're...
Exactly.
If your conscious brain isn't, like, awake enough to stop you, you can just get on.
Yeah, they call it the sort of Peter Pan hour. It's like the ultimate sort of childhood creativity sort of moment. It's where your brain is sort of most set up for that sort of task. I think it works for different people. Sometimes it might not work for you, but I think it's particularly good when you're trying to get words down and you've got a story that you want to... that's sort of just waiting to come out. It's not... I tried it with editing and it's not quite the same thing.
No.
You signed up to Faber Academy, didn't you?
I did.
What course did you take?
So I did their sort of... I can't remember. I think it's just called Write... Well, actually, I do know. It's called Write a Novel. Write a Novel. And it was 6 months. And I know it's called Write a Novel because on the first day, I remember just being so, so nervous. It was at the Faber Head office in Bloomsbury.
Yeah, so it was a live course rather than a...
It was in person, yeah, which I think was important for me. I think online, it's very easy to get distracted, isn't it? But if you're in a room with people, you can't really... Well, you can't check Twitter, can you? So I did that, and I remember on the first day, I remember queuing up at the reception and feeling really just nervous and just unsure about what I was doing. Like, was this a good idea? And there was this awful moment at the sort of reception bit where I had to sign in. And I said, hello. I said, I'm here to start the course, write a novel course. And he said, what's your name? and I gave my name, and she looked at her list and she went, no. And I thought, oh no, there's been an administrative error. I've received an
email.
A sign. I did think, oh no, it's a different Samuel or something's, there's something gone afoot, something's gone wrong here. In the end, it was all fine. And actually I was meant to be on the course. But then what happened was, I remember sitting next to this person on my course. He'll probably be listening to this, and he knows who it is, so this is fine to say, but I remember saying, we had to sort of introduce ourselves to the person we were sat next to. And I said, oh, and you know, how long have you been writing? Bearing in mind, I hadn't really written anything at this point. Mm. And he said, oh, I've been writing for 20 years. And I've written seven novels. You've written seven novels.
And you looked him straight in the eye and just went, just seven? Is that it? That's all you've got.
I was so horrified. And I remember thinking, oh no, I thought this course was write a novel, as in we'll help you write a novel, not like...
Yeah, not write another novel.
Exactly, write an eighth one. And so then at the end of that classic, it was the end of the session, she, our teacher, Sarah May, who's absolutely fantastic. Sarah May's just, I think without her, this book wouldn't exist. But at the end of the session, she said, right, we're going to start sharing work next week, and let me just see who's going to go first. And because I'm Burr, my surname's Burr, I was first on the register. Oh, and she went, yes. Sam, is you okay to just share your first 1,000 words, you know, next week? And I looked at her and I thought, I don't have 1,000 words. So I emailed her on the train on the way home. I said, I'm so sorry, I think I'm on the wrong course. There's been some terrible misunderstanding. I thought you were going to teach me how to write a novel. I don't have the novel. And she wrote back immediately. She was brilliant. She said, oh, don't worry. People that start with a blank page often do particularly well. Mm. You know, you've got till Monday to do the 1,000 words. And the rest is sort of history. It was an amazing time. I sort of look back at those sessions and just think, my God, it was just such a happy, brilliant time to be surrounded by. I don't know. I was really enjoying learning again for the first time as an adult.
Using the Pomodoro method of interviewing, I can't help noticing that we've got about 2 minutes left before you are either incarcerated or ejected.
Well, I mean, 2 minutes until the caretaker comes around shaking his keys, but actually it does close at 9.
Is that last orders?
That's last orders.
You've got to get down 5 flights of stairs, but yeah, exactly. We'll be all right. I wanted to find out a bit more about the Faber course, because I think it was in an email you said, I think the opening chapters of your book got published in like an anthology or something. Is that right? And it got sent round to agents.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that just a few, like a select few writers, or is that everybody on the course gets a bit of their work showcased like that?
So it's everyone that's on the course, on that particular course, gets their sort of synopsis and the first 1,000 words of their book published in this anthology.
That's amazing, isn't it? That's brilliant.
It's an amazing moment. And to see your work, because it's obviously made by Faber, it's properly typeset and it looks like a proper book. And it is a book when it arrives in paperback form. And yeah, that's an amazing moment. They share that with literary agents. And you sort of wait to see if anyone's interested.
You did quite well out of that, didn't you?
Yeah, I was very, very lucky. I had lots of interest from lots of different agents. But yeah, I spoke to the agent that I've got, Helly Ogden at WME, quite early on. And I think it's one of those things. It's like, when you know, you know. She was so, so impressive and so passionate. And and so she actually signed me on a partial, which meant that I worked really closely with her editorially, sort of. The book, I did have a full draft, but I sort of only gave, I think I gave her 20,000 words, and that's what she signed me on. So then I sort of worked with her quite closely on the rest of it, which was really invaluable, actually, just having someone that you know is going to read it. I mean, that's a huge thing, isn't it? You writing, not knowing if anyone's actually going to even care about it, but actually I had someone checking in with me saying, how are you getting on? When's it going to be ready, sort of thing. That was a great sort of motivator. So,
And someone that you know is already behind it and already loves
totally.
It. That's a big thing. You're being very modest, because you actually had, Sam had 13 agents contact him. But he did say in the email, I don't want to come across like a right smug bastard.
I'm doing my absolute
Don't worry, Sam, we can edit it so you don't. it's absolutely fine. We can sort that out.
But it is an amazing story. What an amazing story. It does sound a bit like a fairy tale, doesn't it? It sounds like fiction already.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Just the whole thing, must have been incredible.
It was an amazing moment. And actually, I was in a writing group when it was all happening, to the point where actually it was it went out on submission when I was on this. It was a virtual writing group that I was in, and I remember getting a message from my agent saying, it's out in the world. It was 10 o'clock in the morning, and I knew it was going out on submission that day, but I had this message while I was on this Zoom chat. And I'd asked my agent just shortly before, how long is this going to take? How long will it take before we know if any publisher's interested? And she said, within a week, we'll have a good sense. So I was quite, it was the first time ever I actually felt really relaxed. For years I was working on this thing and constantly tweaking it, constantly making notes on my phone, constantly thinking about it. But it was the first time I actually thought, well, I can't change anything now. It's out. It's gone. There's nothing I can tweak.
Yeah.
And so I felt really calm and relaxed. And I actually didn't feel that nervous. And then, because I knew it was going to take a while. And then I came off this call about lunchtime. And I was in the kitchen. And it was about 2:30. And my phone rang. It was my agent. I thought, oh, that's unusual. She normally WhatsApps me or whatever. I answered the phone. She said, are you sitting down? And I said, no, I'm making a ham sandwich. And she said, put the ham sandwich down and just sit down.
Is it a blunt knife you're using?
And she said, just come and sit down. And she said, we've had our first preempts. So it was about 4 hours after it went out. And I remember wanting to just vomit on the phone.
Wow.
And I couldn't get hold of anyone. My mum and dad weren't answering the phone. Because we had an hour to decide. I mean,
this is a member announcement. The issue desk will be closing shortly. Will all members wishing to borrow books before leaving this evening please make their way to the issue hall now? The library will be closing in 10 minutes.
Uh-oh.
Thank you.
It's the final countdown.
10 minutes to go.
Yeah. There's that bell again.
And then it all just, from there on, it went a bit mad. And it's a blur, actually. I sort of look back and I think, God, did I enjoy it as much as I should have? because it doesn't really get better, but actually it was really nerve-wracking too. It was really, I think when something happens like that, you're sort of scared that it's all going to fall away. I remember thinking, what if they all change their mind, or what if I do something that makes them all think, but I don't know, it's sort of so close, and yet you're still sort of waiting for the confirmation on stuff. It went because that goes on for weeks and weeks. So yeah, it was amazing. I'm very, very, very lucky and very grateful. And I hope, and what I was going to say is that when I was on this call with my writing friends, there was one person I told afterwards, Anstey Harris, actually. She's a fantastic writer. And I said, look, I'm probably not going to be on the next call because I'm going to be having some meetings, but I just want to sort of let you know why I'm not going to be there. And a few weeks passed, and she said, Sam, I really think you should tell everyone on the call. And I remember thinking, oh, gosh, I just can't. It's too embarrassing. It'd be so, I don't know, just I didn't want to be that person. But she was like, do it, because actually I really think this is going to be what the group needs. And it was so amazing to see the support from everyone when I did tell everyone. And actually I hope, and I believe it did, sort of hopefully give everyone some hope that actually if you work hard enough, you write a good enough story, it is possible for anyone. You don't have to be, a famous person. You can just be someone that really wants to write a book. And if you're lucky and things go your way, like they have with me, amazing things can happen. It can feel like a sort of endless slog writing. And I always say to people, celebrate every win that you get, no matter how small or, But yeah, I hope if the story does anything, I hope it inspires people to think, yeah, that could happen to them too.
I think also you're inspiring us, I think, to also don't be afraid to seek support as well. That seems to be something that you've done a lot of, whether it's Writers HQ, whether it's been a writing group or the Faber Academy or whatever. I think a lot of writers are very insular.
Yeah. I think writing has actually taught me that I thought I was quite an introvert, but I think I'm less of an introvert than I thought. And actually, I'm much more of a people person than I realised. I really, really rely on others to sort of motivate me and support me. And you should see how long my acknowledgements are. I'm so, so lucky to have so many brilliant people and people that have helped me, make this book happen. So I would say, yeah, absolutely. There's so many people out there. If you're writing a book, do reach out to Writers HQ. London Writers Salon is another fantastic place that's helped me. Just by contacting people on social media and saying if you enjoy their work, it goes so far. And yeah, I've sort of found myself in a really lucky position now of having this sort of community of people and a network of other writers and publishing people who hopefully are cheering me on as I cheer them on too.
Well, we are two now. Oh, so well done, yes. Sam. What an amazing story.
Thank you so much.
I don't know, to be honest. He's come across a little bit smug.
Well, I was going to say, it is an inspiring story of success, and it's incredible what's happened. And, you know, we saw you on Zoom earlier on. You're a good-looking chap. Even your cat in the picture is quite cute. You do charity work in your spare time. It kind of makes you think there's got to be something wrong with you somewhere, aren't there?
Well, can I just say...
Where are the bodies buried?
When this interview ends, if you don't all say, wasn't he lovely?
Wasn't he lovely?
Very upset. And now it's not going to sound genuine when you say, oh, wasn't he lovely? I'm going to be waiting and listening for
you. You'll find out. You'll find out in a couple of
Sorry,
weeks.
I should say, you say that on most of these episodes, don't you? And it's like a bit of a running joke. I'm not just being deliberately needy.
Desperately not trying to sound smug. It's fantastic. It's such a great story. I think what you said before as well, it does give people hope. It's difficult to blow your own trumpet.
Yeah.
But there is success to be had.
Absolutely. There's so many readers out there. I think that's the thing to take real encouragement from, is that people love books more than ever. And that is kind of an extraordinary thing in itself. With all the stories that are out there, all the streaming services that we can pick from, people just love to pick up a book. So that's a really great starting point anyway. So yeah, I wish everyone the best. And I hope all those brilliant communities, Writers HQ, London's Writer Salon, I hope they have a very long future ahead, because they've done so much to support writers like me.
This is a member announcement. The library will be closing in 5 minutes.
Goodness.
Will members please make their way to the issue hall now?
Get out!
I've still packed away.
Run! Go, Sam, run! Run like the wind! Run.
Thank you so much. Thank you, and don't forget, wasn't he lovely?
We'll let you go. Thank you so much, Samuel. I'm getting nervous for you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Take care, mate.
Bye-bye. Cheers, bye.
Cheers.
Well, Samuel Burr, wasn't he a smug bastard? I mean, lovely. Why do I said that?
No, lovely, it was lovely.
Lovely chap.
Lovely, no, lovely fellow.
He was a lovely chap.
He was worried about coming across as a smug bastard just because of his general smugness about everything that had happened.
I bloody would be.
But is that not a massively unfair goal to set yourself for someone that's experienced what he has in the last year or so? Yeah.
If I'd experienced his success,
I would be the most annoying, obnoxious person constantly. Yeah. I'd be bringing it up in conversations.
I'd be rubbing your faces in it every other minute.
Would. I thought I'd be more depressed after that. I thought I'd be more irritated, depressed, but I feel invigorated by that.
Yeah, there was a message of positivity and do you know what? It's not going to happen for most people, but it can happen.
Yeah, good on him. And good on him for seeking help as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
News, actually, I've joined Writers HQ. I think it might be quite good for me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sort of imagining it like a tide of people that might hopefully sweep me along.
Wash you over the cliff of success.
Yeah.
But yeah, if we've learned anything from those interviews just there...
And that's doubtful. That it's doubtful if we have. But if we have
we probably haven't. But if we have, then it might be that it's really helpful to put yourself out there a bit. You know, the more people you interact with, the more you'll learn, hopefully, and the more you might improve your writing.
Yeah, no, it's gonna build you up, isn't it? Worst case scenario, you realise you're a bit shit compared with all the other people you're interacting with. But either way, there's some closure in that, isn't there?
Well, exactly, you've learned something.
Yeah,
and
you know
it's
where
all
you are.
Valuable information.
You know exactly where you are. Yeah.
I think that, you know, sometimes I think I can be a little bit hideaway, a little bit, I was going to say misanthropic, but not that bad. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's good to get out there.
I think with that stuff, it's good, isn't it? And we were kind of talking about it when we did our goals. It stops you doing stuff and then just forgetting about it and hiding it away. There's a bit more of a...
Well, you're answerable, aren't you?
Yeah, things are out out in the real world, so that things can't just... You can't just ignore stuff and make it vanish.
Yeah, yeah.
And shy away from it and not do it because it might fail.
Yeah.
You're kind of in a position where it's out there. So I think that would be really good.
Good. Seal of approval.
Yeah.
Don't let isolation lead to lunacy. It's so much better. Surely you can see when you reach out. Take the opportunity to knock about with writing community, and you might just make friends, and you might get down and graft, and you might just reach the end of your whatever we're calling it draft.
You might be like Sam, agents swarming like wasps to jam, and the publishers all be like them. We gotta sign this amazing man. So come on over and hang around with us. In terms of writing, we know we're not the best, and there's no way we can guarantee success. But yes, we do our best to help you decompress, 'cause we are the failing writers. We might not be the brightest, but we provide a bit of lightness. So jump in and become a subscriber. Just headbutted the microphone.
Hey, do you know what else we need to do before we wrap this up, this episode?
What's that, John?
Speaking of reaching out to people, we haven't done our feature, Whip 'em Out for the Lads, for quite a while.
Yeah.
The feature that changes name every week. So I think maybe we should do that
now. I haven't done one at all. I have not done one of these.
Oh, you haven't, have you?
No.
Of course. Well, this is exciting.
Yeah.
So, Tommy, what are we doing this week?
We have got, well, it's the start of a story, which apparently has changed quite a lot since this has been sent to us and has been kind of outlined into a full novel by Jennifer Last. It's called Not Dead Girl. So let's hear the first sort of 1,000 words or so that we've got, and then we can come back and have a little chitty chat about it.
Okay.
Not Dead Girl by Jennifer Last. The body of a young woman lay at the bottom of the stairwell in his new apartment. As soon as he saw her, Killian knew his morning would follow an entirely different trajectory than the one he'd planned. He would not catch his bus, he would not catch his train, he would not be arriving on time for his first day of work. The strap of the bag slipped from his shoulder with little regard for his laptop as it hit the landing. He pitched himself down the stairs in her direction. His feet hardly made contact with each step, his palm barely grazing the railing to keep him steady. Kneeling beside her, he paused, not knowing what to do. Now that he was close, he could see that there didn't appear to be any blood in her dark, curly hair. He ruled out a head wound, but not a concussion. Her arms and legs were bent at awkward but not alarming angles, no obvious broken bones. Her eyes were closed, and her lips were slightly parted. He knew not to move an injured person, so he leaned in close, relieved that he could see and hear that she was breathing, slowly, softly, just like the pulse he thought he felt in her wrist. Thank God, he thought to himself, releasing the arm of the not-dead girl and gently placing it beside her. Now that Killian had determined she was alive, he knew he had to do something. His heart was racing. The roar of it, pumping blood and adrenaline through his body, was deafening. He gasped for breath, as though surfacing in a pool, and ran his fingers through his hair. What now? Help. He had to get help. She needed help. He needed help. There were doors to only two units on this landing, and he didn't know who lived behind either. He moved quickly across the landing from one door to the other, pounding his fists in the hope that someone was home and awake.
Help! Help, please! Someone call 911!
He called out as loud as he dared. He glanced back at the young woman and wondered how long she'd been there. The anxiety had stretched the seconds into minutes. Before he heard movement in the unit across the hall, he had been about to go back to his bag for his cell phone. The door of 1A opened a few inches, and a little old woman peered out at him. He rushed to her, but noticed she'd left the chain lock engaged.
Please, call 911.
What is going on?
Her voice was hoarse and cross. He stepped back so that she could see the scene.
Please, call 911. She's hurt. I don't know her or anything. I found her like this. She must have fallen down the stairs or maybe collapsed. I don't know how long she'd been there.
He knew he sounded frantic, but was unable to steady his voice. The woman shut her door. He heard a quiet scrape as the chain slid across. The door swung wide, and the old woman stepped into the hall with authority. She clutched her faded blue housecoat around her thin frame. Her curly grey hair was still flat on one side from sleeping. A fat black cat slipped between her legs and approached the young woman cautiously. The old woman bent slightly at the waist for an uninterested look at the body just feet from her door.
We need to call 911,
he repeated, confused. Kneeling down again beside the young woman, he gently pushed the cat away.
She may have hurt her neck, though. I don't think we should move her.
No, don't call 911.
The old woman stuck out a slippered foot and nudged the shoulder of the younger one.
What?
incredulous, he held out his hand to protect the young woman.
Go home, Cordelia. Leave this nice boy alone.
The old woman made a sucking noise against her teeth and turned her back to both of them. The cat followed. The door slammed. He jumped to his feet as the young woman's eyes flipped open like something in a horror movie. Her face remained expressionless as she stood up and dusted herself off. She opened the door to one bee, one he'd been beating on just minutes before, and went inside. His hands were still stinging. She briefly made eye contact with him before closing the door softly, without speaking a word. The sound of her turning the lock was impossibly loud. He stood there, stupidly, and debated which door might offer him an explanation for what had just happened. He sat on the stairs instead, with his elbows on his knees and his head in his hands, as he tried to process the past few minutes. When he thought he could stand again, he exhaled a great puff of air and looked up. There was a shadow in the crack under the not-dead girl's door. She was likely watching him through the peephole. He stood for his turn to dust himself off and straightened his tie, glaring in the direction of 1B. He climbed the flight of stairs to retrieve his bag and set off to work as though his morning hadn't been disrupted. The building was so quiet, he heard the bus he'd needed to catch pass by in front of the building.
So, yeah, that was Not Dead Girl by Jennifer Last.
I might read... Shall I read her just the little email thing she, she said?
Yeah.
Just to kind of explain it. She said it was originally the prologue of a novel I started one year for NaNoWriMo and kept polishing because I felt like there was something there. I got almost the whole novel plotted out, but not actually written, naturally. But the characters are completely different people now. This no longer fits. I'd love to turn it into a standalone short story in the future. I'm open to feedback on it.
Oh, interesting, isn't it?
So it's sort of not gone. It's not gone anywhere other than this at the moment.
This is like a stub, isn't it? It's like a seed.
It is. What did you think? What did you think of it?
Well, do you know what? This experience sort of what struck me about it is like the importance of context. So as you put it there, John, about this being the sort of originally the prologue to something else. And also. The mood that you're in when you read something is incredibly important, right? Because I first read this when I was in, I'll be honest, a pretty bad mood, trying to read it really quickly between two different things that I didn't really want to do. And I didn't get on with it because I read it far too quickly. And I was thinking, I don't know what this is. I'm not sure, like, what's happened. Someone was dead and then they're not dead. And, nothing sort of grabbed me about it. And then I sort of went back and read it in a much more reflective tone, having looked at the sort of context of what it was. And I thought, other things start to come out of it, right? About like, you think, why is this woman pretending to be dead?
Yes.
Has she done this before? You go, you see like the details you see about right in the very first line, the first time I read it, all that I got was the body of a young woman lay at the bottom of the stairwell, thinking it's like the beginning of a murder mystery. And I totally missed that in his new apartment. So then you see that this is the first day that that guy's been there. So has this woman been doing this before? Has she done it before to other residents? What's her story?
And like, she clearly has, because the old lady...
Yeah, because the exactly. Come and give her a nudge with her foot.
Doesn't look surprised.
What if the old lady... Is there not a possibility she's a witch of some description?
And she's... I mean,
it's funny how different people get different things.
Different interpretations.
Do you know, I think there's a little bit of that built in, the supernatural of the old woman and the way she kind of...
Oh, wow.
Pulled her blue.
That's interesting.
Night.
Yeah, no, I didn't go there.
I didn't get that, I'll be honest. But I wanted to, because it's not kind of like an obvious sort of genre that's, because it's not, it's not like a comedy. It's not like, clearly the fact that she's alive, it's not like a murder mystery. Yep. So it's difficult to know what it's setting up. But there is like sort of intrigue about
exactly
who these people are. You kind of want to know. You want to know more about them?
Yeah.
Can I point out the old woman also has a black cat? Just saying.
That's true.
All right, Good Tom. Point. She might be a witch.
Let's call her a witch.
She might
Let's
be a
say
witch.
She's a witch.
Yeah.
This is, if you are a long-time listener, you might remember that Jennifer Last wrote a flash fiction piece involving broken windows and carnivorous squirrels.
Oh, yeah.
Which I wrote down the episode number. Hang on. Series 2, episode 25.
Good grief.
She did that. But I really like the way she writes. I think she's so slick and neat at painting characters. Do you know what I mean? She's very good at inference. There's some lovely clues to the main characters, his kind of nervous disposition.
Yeah, I thought that. I mean, it never strays into over-explaining what's going on in someone's head.
No, exactly.
It just paints. You see what's happening, and you have to interpret it.
That's it.
Yeah.
He called out as loud as he dared, it says, which I thought was really brilliant. And the line, help, he had to get help. She needed help. He needed help. And you can hear his rising panic in just that line.
Yeah.
And she's really good at that. Yeah. And also the sketch of the, let's call her witch, the sketch of the witch is just enough, isn't it?
Was he called Grotbags? I think she was called Grotbags in the original draft.
That's going to go over so many people's heads.
Yes.
But for me, that description of the old woman is like, it's just the perfect amount of description with the, you know, the flat hair on one side from sleeping and the faded blue house coat.
That because she's just whipped that big pointy hat off and they tend to squash the sides of her hair.
But I like Jen's writing.
Yeah.
I think if Jen ever wrote a book, I would happily read it.
If Jen could actually get round to finishing writing a book.
There you go, Jen. There's a little spur for you.
Yeah.
You just got yourself a pre-sale.
We said hypocritically and
yeah.
But it would be interesting to know, wouldn't it? She said that like the characters have changed and a lot of it's changed and she's plotted a lot. It would be interesting to know in which direction
where's
she's
it gone and what's happened. Yeah.
And what you said about genre, Dave, I thought that was bang on. It's not clear at all, is it? But I was sort of imagining a kind of mystery romance or something.
Yeah, well, it's difficult. So that was my sort of thought, is about like how difficult it must be for sort of agents and, you know, essentially people who for a living read the first bit of a book and have to make a snap judgment as to whether it's worth reading the rest of it or not. It's so hard, isn't it? Without that sort of, without a bit of context in there, it's really difficult to make a sort of, you know, a judgment.
Yeah, which is why a query letter is so important, isn't it? Because I'm guessing you don't even read the actual first three chapters until you know what it is about and you fully understand it. So we are coming to it very blind here. But I was I'm like you, Dave, I was intrigued enough to want to know more. Like, what would the reasons for someone doing that be?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, she just does it for, is it just a joke? Is it just to wind people up? Or is she, like, is she one of the characters in Casualty that's dead? Do you know what I mean? Does she play the dead bodies or something? And she's just practicing. I don't know.
Could be. Who knows?
I like the idea of this, of this girl who pretends to people that she's dead.
But also, like, what's his story? Like,
yeah,
because it's a new apartment. He's just moved there.
Yeah.
It's his first day of a new job, I think it is, isn't it? So he's what sort of person is it that walks? You walk out of your room and you see what you think is a dead body on the floor, and your first thought is, "Well, not going to catch my bus today, am I? I'm not going to get me train." So, like, what, you know, what, like, what is it that's what's his jeopardy in that moment? Why is he sort of thinking about work so much? Mm. What are his circumstances?
First day, though, Dave.
Causing him
Come
to...
on, you want to make a good impression.
I know, but yeah,
because if you turn up late to your first day at work and you say, "Oh, there was a dead body in my building," they're not gonna believe you, are they?
But also, if you then get there, because this has taken time, so he probably has missed his bus by this point. And if you get to, if you're late on your first day at work and you get there and you go, "I'm so sorry I'm late. There was a dead body outside my door." And everyone goes, "Oh my God, that's terrible." And you go, "Well, actually, she wasn't dead. She was just lying down." That's the worst excuse for being late to your first day of work in the world, isn't it?
Turns out what she happened? Was just
well,
lying
turns out,
down.
Turns out nothing happened. It was just a woman lying down.
I was once late to a job.
I didn't want to drag this story up, John.
Do you remember it?
I
was once late to a job at Channel 4 because of a dead body. I looked out my window and there was a body outside. I had like a light inlet bit in a building and I was like a few floors up. But there was a big drop and I looked outside and there was literally a guy flat on the sort of concrete, clearly fallen down the hole. And thankfully he wasn't dead. But I think he was very, very badly injured. But I just heard this little groan, and I thought, "Oh, that's good that he's not dead."
I better get off to my gig.
better get off to my gig. But yeah.
Oh.
That was an interesting moment. Yeah.
But again,
didn't tell that story very
no,
well.
No, but again, your excuse for being late was I thought someone was dead. Turns out they weren't.
Turns out it wasn't.
Turns out they were just lying down.
So you're suggesting, Dave, in that situation, John would have been better off throwing something down onto the man to finish him off, so he was?
Yeah.
So well, you could say, no, he definitely was dead, I checked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the time I'd finished with him, he was really, yeah.
He was, yeah.
Yeah. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So thanks to Jennifer Last for sending in a story about someone who
wasn't dead.
One more
question, though.
Oh, go on, Tom.
How does it, she's saying it'd be quite nice to turn it into a little short story. What do you do to change it into a short story? Where does it need to, I think it needs some kind of...
It's got to be longer.
I don't know if it needs to be massively longer. It just needs some kind of twist or finish, doesn't it?
It does. It's definitely not finished.
I think, actually, yeah. I think we've already done it in terms of a really short story. The guy thinks he's got a good excuse for being late for work. When she wakes up and he goes, fucking hell, now I don't have a good excuse. So he kills her. End of story. There we go. That's a one pager.
Yeah.
That's lovely,
yeah.
Dave.
And then he goes to work and the girl worked at his... He works in a coffee shop, say. And she also works there. And everyone's worried about why she's not turned up.
And he gets promoted to chief barista.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Until one day, the old woman comes in.
Going, my pretty. Yeah, she was a witch all along.
And he falls down some stairs. Dramatic irony.
So there we go, Jen.
There you go. So, I mean, that's done it. That's award win, that, isn't it?
Ideas to play with there.
Wrapped up in a nice little bow.
We're good to people, aren't we? Quality, that, isn't it? Brilliant.
Yeah. What does it need? What does it really need?
Oh.
It needs a little bit of inference, doesn't it, at the end? You don't know why she did it, but there's just there's like a little clue or a... Almost like a little mystery to solve.
Yeah.
It needs a half twist. If it's a bit of sort of flash fiction, it needs a half twist to nearly finish it, but to lead you in a direction where you think, hold on a minute, did he do this without realizing it? Or, you know, whatever the something is.
What it's lacking like the emotional core, isn't it?
Mm.
Because without knowing why she did it,
there's
no emotional core to it.
Yeah.
So you would obviously, in the story, you would get onto that next, but why?
See, I thought it needed a bit of something at the start. I wanted to know a bit more about Killian. Is it Killian? I wanted to know a bit more about him and his story, about why, what, like, I wanted to see him sort of in a rush to get his bus or get his train, to get a bit more of his character, more of that sort of flustered thing. So when this thing happens and interrupts it, it's a bit more of like a, begins that roller coaster sort of effect. So then when it turns out that she's fine, he doesn't quite know how to feel about it. It just needs that a bit more of an uppy downy
emotional. You
want
to up the ante.
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant. Yes.
So we know he's got to be on time before it happens.
I want some stakes in there.
Be good to know.
Yeah.
Let us know, Jen.
She's probably finished it by now. She sent us that a while
ago. She must have done.
Probably be in bookshop soon, wouldn't it?
She sent it a while ago. So,
send us the novel through. Jen, we'd love to have a little read of it.
Well, I guess that just about wraps it up.
We've got through quite a lot. We've got through quite a lot today, haven't we?
We really did.
Yeah.
I guess we finish with the moral of the story, which is that remember that no man is an island, apart from the Isle of Man, obviously, which is
an island.
Is an island.
Yeah. And they have their own money. They have their own money.
Is that right?
Which you can't spend.
Can't spend it.
In the rest of the United Kingdom. That is. Yeah. Manx.
They've got their own little parliament as well, haven't they?
Yeah.
Sorry, that sounded patronising to them.
It's
a perfectly normal-sized parliament for the size of Ireland. It really is. Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, why not start now by getting involved with us? Send us an email, let us know what you're writing. Send us a little story. Send us the first three chapters of your book or whatever. And, you know, like, follow, review. And if you're feeling super generous, you could even maybe buy us a coffee. And you can do all that at failingwriterspodcast.com.
Yeah.
There you go. Share the love.
Week off next week, and then we're back. Actually, we've managed to get an interview with a bit of a superstar, really. Probably slightly before our time, when she hit the big time, but nevertheless, a massive name in literature. So that's to look forward to.
You definitely don't want to miss that one. That's in a couple of weeks. So, we'll see you then.
Okay.
Cheerio.
Bye.
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?